It's when you sleep, right? They say there's always somebody always under the bed. I'm going to tell you a story about Nebi's nightmare. One night, I like to call him Nebi. That's what I call him. It's a hard name to spell, so I call him Nebi Chadnezzar. So I could get the C, because I always leave out the H. Nebi Chadnezzar. Nebi was having a nightmare, and he couldn't. It was so scary, it drove him crazy. The problem is, when he woke up, he couldn't remember it. How many of you, when you have dreams, you don't remember them in the morning? Okay, Janet remembers all hers. Okay, I don't. I forget. And it drives me crazy because it's like, oh, what happened in the dream? I want to know. And it's gone. But you see, I'm just a lowly pastor. I don't count. So I can't call all the church members, get down here to the church and help me figure out this dream, because it wouldn't work. But Nebi was a king. And when the king opens his mouth, you came running. So all the wise men came to come hear Nebi's dream. This is what Nebi dreamed. Your dreams, do any of your dreams have music with it?
No?
Nebuchadnezzar's dreams were really great. He even had music in his dreams. And so he called all of the wise men to come, and he had to come and call Daniel. And we're going to be talking about Daniel. And Daniel helped him understand what the dream was and the interpretation of it. And we're going to go a little tiny bit over some of those things to show that who is in charge of all the kings and rulers of the world. Who do you think? If I had Jose here, Jose would tell me, God is. God is in control. This morning in Egypt is out of control. They're going around and they're rounding up all the followers of the old president and they're killing them. They've killed 300 already this morning. Policemen are just going up and just shooting people. God is in control. God puts in leaders, takes down leaders. God is in control. So our nightmares don't have to be nightmares. Why? Because we know who's in control. And so when we have that nightmare, just remember, we can have a good sleep if we remember who is in charge of our life and what we are to do. We are continuing our 2013 series, Road Trip Through the Bible. I want to thank Pete and Perry for taking two of the Old Testament books and bringing us right along on the journey as we travel farther and farther along in the Bible. Route 66, that main street of America. Today, we're taking that same Route 66 theme and going through the 66 books of the Bible. Today, we've left Texas and we're going into Oklahoma. How many of you have been to Oklahoma before? Two. No one on this side's been to Oklahoma. Can I let you guys on this side in on a secret? Oh, Donna has? Oh, I was going to say, you haven't missed much. I went through Oklahoma in February, and all I remember is there was snow on both sides of the road, and they had paved out something in the middle, and it was like tunnel. I was going through this white tunnel, and it was night. And that's all I remember of Oklahoma as we're driving crazy through that city. But Oklahoma has some really neat things in Route 66 that we're going to spend some time over the next 3 or 4 weeks. One of them is a beautiful Route 66 museum. Now, a museum. What's the purpose of a museum? To display what? Antiques, which are things from the past. All right, so in the present, we can appreciate things that are in the past. Now, some of us are way too young in this room, I hope, to remember things like this. Any of you remember diners that look like this? With the colors and the Coca-Cola? Anybody remember Mobil Oil and that flying Pegasus horse? Remember that? These are things that they've depicted in this. Okay. Now, this is a 1987 Chevy, right?
No.
You should all know this one. Even those you aren't car buffs. What is it?
56.
It's a 56 Chevy. A famous car, an icon in American folklore. And these are things that they have in museums to help us understand what happened in the past. This morning, our exit is the book of Daniel. What does it mean to sing Dare to Be a Daniel today? Have you ever thought about that? The book of Daniel, I could ask a survey right here and I'll see it. What are the two most famous books that Adventists love to talk about? Is it Genesis and Obadiah? Daniel and Revelation. If I was to have a graph, it would look like this. Here's all the other books. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers. Daniel! Revelation! That's what the graph would look like. Why do we like those two books? Why do we like to talk about those two books? Because God put messages in there, especially for our time today. And Adventists have always been fixated on the book of Daniel. The first commentary an Adventist wrote, Uriah Smith, a large volume, and it is the standard by which we help to interpret the book of Daniel. Seventh-day Adventists have written six commentaries, big commentaries on the book of Daniel. The one that I used for most of my study this week is a new one written by one of my Hebrew teachers who was with us in Greece, Professor Stanakovich. He's from Walla Walla University. This and his brother wrote a companion one on Revelation. Daniel, Wisdom to the Wise, Commentary on the Book of Daniel. And I like how he talks about this book. He starts it in such a way to bring our attention to what's happening today. Who's this? That's Prince George something, something, something. La, 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 la. Prince George. Everybody knows his name. In fact, he's so royal that when he came out for pictures, he raised his hand to wave to the crowd. He's already got it in the genes. A prince. And oh my goodness, the news is just, that's all you're hearing about. I mean, not that the kid messed his diapers or anything like that, but it's just, a prince is born. Yeah. Daniel. Daniel was a prince. I know we think of the stories of Daniel, and we think of him in the lion's den, and we think of him in the dreams and everything, and we forget so often his upbringing. And I don't see, Perry, I guess Don went out. Can you start to hand out our study guides as a group? Everybody knows Prince George, who will become king. Do you know that Daniel is part of that royal line of Judah? And we forget that. And all around him, his cousins are being dragged away to Babylon. And at the age of 15, in the first siege of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar takes a 15-year-old, Daniel, and takes them off. Daniel was born in about 620. Legend says that he lived to be 101 years old. Daniel is very important in the Bible. Josephus, the Hebrew historian at the time of Rome and the sacking of Jerusalem the second time, called Josephus one of the greatest prophets. And not only do Christians and Judaism adhere and hold Daniel in high esteem, Muslims do also. Hindus talk about Daniel. Daniel is known for wisdom. And so tradition has it that when Daniel died, they didn't know what to do with his bones. And so one day, one set of tribal leaders took the bones and had them on their side of the river. And they prospered, while on the other side of the river, there was famine, drought, pestilence, and the people were terrible. And so the big thing was, we got to try and steal the bones and bring them to our side of the river. Well, they came up with a compromise. The compromise was year one, on the odd years, it stays on this side of the river. On the even years, the bones are collected and are buried on the other side of the river. Well, that worked for a while until one great politician had to mess everything up. He went and got the bones and buried them in the middle of the river. You were actually supposed to laugh right there. And so nobody knows where the bones are now. And so in Susa, there is this huge monument, and they call that the Tomb of Daniel. But nobody knows. It's like Grant's tomb in New York City. Where is Grant buried? He's not buried. It's an empty thing. And the same thing in with Daniel and his bones. But Daniel was such an important person. Stanakovich makes the point in his commentary, you can't understand the prophecies of Daniel unless you understand the person. And it's amazing. He writes his commentary, and in the introduction, he mentions that those have gone before and have taken Daniel and the interpretations and the dreams and the prophecies, but they miss the meaning. And so his commentary is mainly setting the background and making you understand why Daniel's prophecies were so important. And that's what I'm going to do. There's no way in 35 minutes I could go through the book of Daniel and all the prophecies. It's the same thing in the book of Revelation. Now, book of Revelation, when we do Revelation, we're hoping to do that at Rye Patch and have a four-part Revelation look at the book from four different angles. But Daniel prophecies, I'm not going to go into any of those. I'm not going to go into the end day events because I can't do justice to it. So we're going to look at Daniel. What was he? Why was he so revered? Why is he so revered today? Mainly, what does that mean for us? What does it mean for me and my life today? Daniel starts at that age 15. If you look at your large one, the landscaped one, where you may have to share and sit by somebody, I like the way that this put out. We've talked about the good kings and the bad kings. On page number 2, here's a list of the kings of Israel and the length of their reign. And sure enough, Israel, 19 bad kings, no good. Now we're at Judah, and we are down at the very end, getting to the last kings of Judah. In 605, Nebuchadnezzar comes now to Jerusalem and has his first siege. Prophets and messengers of God have been going over and over and over, delivering the messages that unless the people repented, did a U-turn, and reestablished their relationship with God, they're part of the covenant, bad things were going to happen. And now, for the very first time, a foreign enemy has besieged and surrounded Jerusalem. And the future kings and leaders are all led away. Daniel is 15 years old when this happens, a teenager. We forget that. We think of Daniel as this grown up who's so wise, and we forget how old he was. He's ripped away from everything in his life, his family, and he is led on a 1,000-mile walk through the desert. Now, there's a little caveat to this story. For Daniel is going to be used to serve the new emperor of the world, Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar is smart. Why kill all the smartest and the wisest? Why not have them come and work for me? And Nebuchadnezzar did that, and he now has the best. And so we remember the story. Daniel and his three friends, teenagers, and they are brought to Babylon. They are now to be raised in the king. The king offers them the best, offers them food from the king's own table. Now, is there anything wrong with food? No, it's not. And sometimes, I know I remember in the Bible stories, there's a picture of the feast, and I never forget this picture. Here's a picture of a pig with a great big apple in its mouth. After doing some research in several of the commentaries, including Uriah Smith's, the issue is not the diet, but rather food is offered in prayers to the king. It's the same thing in early Christian church. I've told you before in the letter of Revelation, once a year, Caesar's representative would come, and people would be able, the common man actually had food in the market. Food that they never had. They had meat that was, and they never got to do that because they're poor people. Caesar said the way to keep a happy people from revolting is occasionally give them good food, food that they don't have. If the people came to the store, you could buy, and for a really reasonable price, day-old meat. Because if the meat had been offered the day before, it was offered in a great big sacrifice with prayers and incense to Caesar. The food at the end of the day was taken back to the merchants, and they had extra food over, so the next day there was a sale on meat, and people could buy it. And so this is what's happening here. These offerings are not once a year offerings, like with Caesar. These are daily offerings. Every single morning, the food that was served to Nebuchadnezzar's court was brought before the king and prayed for and blessed by the king. So this became an issue to Daniel and his three friends, not just on whether it was a vegetarian diet. Guess what? They never brought bread and fruit and vegetables to Nebuchadnezzar. There was only meat. It was like the guy was from Texas, and all he had was steak, and that was it. And so Daniel then asks for food that has not been offered to the king daily. What would that be? Simple breads, fruits, and vegetables. And so Daniel and his three friends say, we don't want to offer worship to the king. We'll work for him as our employer. We will pray for our employer, but we won't pray at the employer. Do you see the difference of what the difference is on there? And so that changes everything. And that helps set Daniel. And so this is happening now when Daniel is 17 and 18 years old as they come. And teenagers, this group, he develops a relationship with these three close friends, princes just like Daniel. Daniel is called in the middle of the night because Nebuchadnezzar had a nightmare. And Daniel is brought forward to help interpret a dream. And now we see more historical settings of Daniel, and we see his life and how important. It's at this time, though, that Daniel starts to make enemies. God's servants will always cause enemies to rise up. You look at all of the Old Testament prophets that we've been looking at. They were all killed. Daniel, as best as my reading I researched, Daniel is the only one of the primary major prophets that was not killed. Jeremiah went into self-exile because he went to Egypt. We don't really know. But Daniel's bones are buried, and he was given a honorary burial. It was okay to be Daniel, but all the other prophets were bad in the eyes of the people. In Daniel's time, now you have competition. The Chaldeans, the soothsayers, the wise men of the court who were very great politicians. O king, tell us your dream. And these men could tell the king their dreams. Of course, it's just like people who do hypnotism or illusionists who use things, or faith healers. Faith healers come up and, I understand you have this. And the person says, well, I didn't tell you. Well, come to find out, the guy was talking to one of the faith healer's staff earlier in the day. And so the word got back to the faith healer. Now the faith healer knows. Well, people are mesmerized. The Chaldeans would do this. They would be like Nostradamus. And you read Nostradamus' prophecies, and people today say, oh, well, that's what he meant. The bridge fell down. What bridge? Oh, well, this bridge, 500 years later. And so the Chaldeans recognize right away Daniel's power of tapping into a higher source. And that is taking away their bread and butter. Their whole lives are going to be affected by this man, Daniel. After the dream, Nebuchadnezzar has a statue built, 60 feet high, out of solid gold. The wonderful story about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Nebuchadnezzar sees a fourth person in the furnace. I know there were only three. And the fourth, he says, looks like the son of the gods. Even Nebuchadnezzar at this point in the story, in the narrative, is starting to recognize that he is not in control of everything. A few years later in your chart, Nebuchadnezzar now is gone. His grandson, Belshazzar, is reigning. Daniel is 80 years old. He's getting up there in age. But he's still third in command. He is, we would call today, like a prime minister. And remember the handwriting on the wall? The princess, the king's mother, says, there is somebody who can help you understand this. I remember the stories from my father of Nebuchadnezzar and his dream. And Daniel is called forth to help Belshazzar understand what the dream is. Daniel, as his custom is to do what? Pray. Three times a day he prays. He's not a closet prayer. He opens the shutters and prays. And so as the picture shows on the screen, the Chaldeans see this and they hatch up a plan. For Daniel, everything Daniel does is a success. In fact, if you go through Scripture, Daniel is the only person I can find in Scripture that does not have any known sin. You can't find anything. Now, Joseph, there's a little bit of arrogance in there and a little bit of pride when he's a teenager, but you don't find anything there with Daniel. Nothing. Except that he's a prayer warrior. And he prays for his people. You read his prayers. There's seven prayers in Daniel. Not one of the prayers are for himself. They're always about others. You remember now the story of what happens because Daniel will not pray now to the king. Emperors have changed. Empires have changed. We're in the Persian Empire. Daniel spreads over. Daniel before the lion's den. Stories of Daniel. In the last few minutes that we have, the historical parts that you've had there in front of you, that's good and that's great. But I want to look at one set of people who were at the fiery furnace, not the soldiers. We know what happened to them. Remember, they were killed when they threw the three Hebrews into the fire. I want to know what happened to the other church members. Have you ever stopped to think about them? The command is, Nebuchadnezzar brings his court and all of the people. The statue is in the middle, surrounding it at its base is the fiery furnace. Around then you have the king's throne. Farther around you have all the princes and all the governors and all the rulers and the wise men. And farther out then you have the people. How many people went with Daniel, Shadrach, and Meshach, and Abednego to Babylon from Jerusalem? Ezra is actually going to give us a number and let us know how many. But there were not a few. There were hundreds and thousands who were taken. Good, standing, trained in Hebrew university. They knew their Bible. They were good, chosen people of God. They are taken along with Daniel to Babylon. The order comes that at the sound of the music, all are to bow down and pay respect to the king. Now, this is a different kind of thing because if you study what they were meaning, this is the same thing why Christians would not give allegiance to Caesar. This is not, I can't say pledge of allegiance to the flag because that means I'm giving my life. We have a Christian flag, an American flag and a Christian flag behind us. There are other Christian brothers and sisters who say, no, we don't pledge allegiance to the flag. We only pledge allegiance to God. There's a difference. The idea in bowing down and the proclamation makes it very clear. This is recognizing the king as the source of all of your life. And a Hebrew could not do that. There is Yahweh who is the source. A Christian can't do that to Caesar because Jesus Christ is our Lord and Master. And I imagine in my own mind, the story might have looked something like this. On the count of three, we're all going to go bow down. And I'm sure that there were some Hebrews who said, well, maybe if I cross my fingers and I cross my ankles and I bow down, it doesn't count. None of you ever did that in grade school, right? If you cross your fingers, the lie you tell, if you do it behind your back, doesn't count, right? Well, maybe if I bow down like this real quick and get up on my feet. It won't count. No, this is lying prostrate at the sound of the music and doing it more than once. You can't just do it surrounding our princes and guards to make sure that the king's demand is taken seriously. And so it starts. The king's court is first, and it's like a wave at a baseball field. It comes by your section and you raise your hands and you go down and you watch around the stadium. It surrounds and goes around and around. The king's people, his court, bowed first and then the people. And the people watched their leaders. And in the midst of this Hebrew delegation, three young men don't bow down. I imagine the guy sitting next to or kneeling on the ground to him, Shadrach, pulling on his robe, get down, they'll see us. It doesn't count. We're asking for forgiveness. It's okay. God will wink at us this time. No, they wouldn't do it. You're going to bring attention to us. We already left Jerusalem in chains. Now you're going to have us killed right here. But they wouldn't bow down. They wouldn't, no matter what. The king respected them as their employer so much more that he said, I'll give you another chance. I'll break my own edict just to let you do it again, because I respect you so much. But the three young men would not cave in. Not to peer pressure. Not to their identity of being the chosen race. They would not give in because they would not allow anything else to become their Lord other than God. What would we do today if that happened to us? Well, Pastor, I know when the National Sunday Law is passed, I'll have it all figured out by then, and I'm going to be one of those ones who are standing. If you haven't practiced exercising, standing up for your faith now in times of peace, you're deluding yourself to think that you'll be able to stand up in times of persecution. We're no different than anybody else. Look around at all the other multiple cultures. This has been bared out in testimony for thousands of years. It's how you act now when eyes are not looking at you, which will determine how you will act when the spotlight is on you. Dare to be a Daniel. Dare to what? Stand alone. Dare to say, I'm not listening to gossip. Dare to stand up and say, I will service and witness. I will take what God is saying and I will put it in my practice now. I won't hide it under a bushel. I'll be loud. I will be vocal. I will have passion. I won't try to be like a leaf and hide behind a tree so nobody can see me. I'm worshiping you, God. What good is it to worship God if no one sees you? Not for the purpose of gaining honor and glory, but for being a witness. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are witnesses for God. Take your Connect card. There are three questions. Hopefully you have looked it over it, as our practice is every week. This just says our next step. We've talked about Daniel and his prayers, his seven prayers. His ability, I will pray even if it says that it's not comfortable to pray. I'll pray even when people are watching me. I'll bow down and I will give thanks for my meal at a restaurant. Not silently or ignore it. I will do that. Am I as faithful in my prayer life as Daniel? To ponder. Ponder this. Daniel's life shows no known sin, yet he identifies with God's people and asks God to forgive their sins. Daniel's and his people. His life is so entwined with God's people. And so the question, am I able to place myself in God's children's sinner camp? Or am I more interested in my own performance? And my own personal relationship, my own family, that I don't tap into the world church, my local church, my community of faith. And then where I had to check this box. Daniel and his three friends stood up publicly for God. Am I ready to stand strong for Christ and for His mission? We found in our Sabbath school lesson this morning the mission. The mission is to go and spread the gospel. And if necessary, use words. That is what we're here for. That's what a Christian is, a witness. Can people see Jesus in us? Can people see Jesus in me? That's the question to ponder. Jesus is what it's all about. Jesus is the center of our church. So when our neighbors are looking at us, are they wondering whether or not we're doing something 1 hour before the sun goes down? Is that what they're worried about? Or are they worried about, is Jesus at that church? Do they worship Jesus? Can we see evidence? Can we see fruit of their relationship with Jesus? For Jesus is the center of our relationship. Jesus was the center of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's life. And the Son of God walked with them in the fire. Talked with them in the fire. What an experience to be able to have. To be able to witness and tell others about. Let's stand and sing our consecration song. It's going to be up on the screen with the music. The words will be there. It's a youth song. Dare to be a Daniel. Dare to stand alone. Now, have you seen Daniel standing at the age of 15, 17, 18, 50, 80, all the way into his life? He always stood tall for God. Let's stand. Dare to be a Daniel. Dare to stand up for God. Jesus stood up for you, not in a closet, but publicly on a cross. Am I willing to stand up for Christ? And now, may the God who is in charge of all kingdoms, past and present and future, guide and protect you and lead you as he did Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. May we go forth from this room no longer bashful, no longer embarrassed, no longer ashamed, but with passion, boldly stand up for Jesus. Amen.